Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we are asking the question, is capitalism a force for good?
That's right, and this was intended to be a provocative title for this episode. Is capitalism a force for good? Didn't we recently have a beer called A Force for Good?
We did. Yes.
We completely missed an opportunity.
We had a good pairing here.
However, this is a topic that we feel is important. We want to talk about capitalism in a way that we feel like is fair, while at the same time we're addressing the fact we know that this isn't going to be one of those episodes where at the very end you're going to have like your three things to do. We're hoping that this is going to be an episode that causes you to think. Because ultimately, we believe that the attitudes that you have about something as fundamental as capitalism will impact how it is that you interact with different businesses and with the world around us as well.
And maybe even that desire or not to start your own business someday, kind of how you view the system that we all kind of live in to a certain extent matters in your actions, actually.
Totally.
It is going to be somewhat deterministic in how you move about in the world. But Matt, before we get to that, I just saw this great article from our friend J.D. Roth, who writes at Get Rich Slowly, and it was all about speaking up for yourself. And I think this is like one of those things that maybe we don't do enough as consumers. Basically, he had someone come out to his house to repair a leak in the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And they had told him, hey, it's going to cost us this much to come out, and then this is our hourly rate. They were out there for... at most, I think you said 2 hours, and then the bill he got...
Yeah, not long at all.
He was shocked. It was like $1,500. And so he at first was just kind of upset, wasn't sure what to do about it, but he decided, you know what, I'm going to speak up for myself, and he ended up calling the company, and the bill was, without him having to really even harangue anyone, cut in half, essentially, and to something that made more sense, commensurate with the labor that actually... was involved in fixing mm-hmm. his roof. And it just made me think, like, there are so many times that happens, and maybe we bemoan it quietly, or we're upset about it, we're frustrated on the inside. But so much of the time, the way to go about getting something fixed, when something is wrong, when we have been overcharged or underserved, is to reach out to that business and to tell them and ask for them to fix it on our behalf.
That's right. Yeah, we need to advocate for ourselves. And like you said, he didn't have to, like, go, stand in front of an appeals court or something like that. It was literally a phone call. But I think that's honestly the biggest disconnect, or not disconnect, but that's the hurdle that keeps us from moving forward and doing something that would allow us to claw some of our money back, is that if there isn't like a button to click or an app where you submit a complaint or something like that, if those things don't exist, it's almost as if there's no path forward. It's like, what do I do? Am I supposed to actually pick up the phone and call this company? And a lot of times, yes, that's exactly what we need to do. And I loved, he actually started that post talking about the fact that he hates confrontation.
Yeah.
He does not like to confront people, to ask questions that don't necessarily need to be asked, but in this case, his money was on the line, and I was glad to see him advocate for himself. And that is something that we need to do more of ourselves as well.
Yeah, and it's certainly uncomfortable at times, but when our money is on the line, we have to be willing to speak up, to push back, to ask the question at least. Can you explain this bill to me a little bit further? You don't even have to get hyper confrontational. I don't think JD did. I think he questioned why the bill was as much as it was, and like, well, what was actual work done? Because they were just here for a couple hours. And so asking those gentle questions, even as you're starting to prod in the beginning, can help the company realize, wait, we screwed up. We billed you the wrong amount, and we will fix it without you even having to make a fuss. And so sometimes you do have to take it to the level of confrontational. You do have to maybe make a post on Twitter, or you do, even in extreme circumstances, have to like pick it out in front of a company in order to get a problem resolved. But most of the time, a simple phone call will clear things up pretty easily.
That's right, man. Let's go ahead and introduce the beer that we're going to share during this episode. It is a Bourbon Barrel Brick Kiln. This is a beer by Jackie O's. Looking forward to drinking this one and sharing our thoughts on this one at the end of the episode.
Yeah, especially this one. Jackie O's is one of my all-time favorite breweries at this point. And so
they're awesome.
Should be a good one. All right, well, let's get on to the provocative question of the day.
Let's do it.
Is capitalism a force for good? And this question made me think, for some reason, about the movie and the book Moneyball. And yeah, if you've read that book, if you watched the movie,
Brad Pitt
was in it. Yes, that's right. Jonah Hill, I think. And I read the actual book because I'm kind of a baseball nerd and I found it fascinating. And Michael Lewis is just such a great writer. But if you've read the book or watched the movie, you have probably acquired maybe a new understanding of the word underrated, because that book basically details the true story of baseball general manager Billy Beane, how he changed the face of the game of baseball by starting to amass players who had certain characteristics that were kind of boring, but ultimately led to more team victories.
That's right.
Basically, he was drafting and trading for players who took a lot of walks. Like, that's one way of saying it. Instead of the sexier features of baseball, like home runs and stolen bases, he realized that those don't actually pay off when it comes to victories as much as guys who can take walks. And so he got these really undervalued players who could actually add a lot of value to the team, even though most of baseball said, yeah, we'll basically give these players to you because they don't fit the mold of a traditional baseball player that we're used to seeing.
Right.
And so that group of underrated players actually ended up taking the Oakland A's basically from worst to first. And Matt, I think similarly, capitalism is it's kind of like the baseball players that Billy Beane was finding. It's this system that has, at least in recent years, been a little more denigrated. It's been undervalued, maybe. And so, yeah, you and I, we think that it is a force for good, and we're going to kind of make the case for that in today's episode.
Yeah, another quick example that I can think of that's not sports related is basically like taking care of your teeth, right? Like, you can get the fancy toothpaste. You can even get a nicer toothbrush, like one of those fancy ultrasonic toothbrushes. You can even get like some of those super fancy water jets. I don't even know how much those things cost, but all that being said, you can do all of those things, or you can get some dental floss, which is like the most basic thing, and floss your stupid teeth. It's going to win every single time. It is not pretty, but it gets the job done. I feel that way, again, similarly as the Billy Beane. Floss is just this underrated thing, but it does get the job done every single time. It makes a big impact. And so, yeah, this is a big reason why we're talking about capitalism during this episode, because, I mean, one of the other things, too, is we feel that it's become in vogue recently to hate on capitalism. We're seeing socialist tendencies actually growing in our society. And, you know, we're going to do our best here to present a nuanced take here, because it's not like we're saying that unfettered capitalism is going to be like this glorious pinnacle of humanity or anything like that. But the stats show that only half of younger Americans actually view capitalism fondly. However, as recently as 2010, 2/3 of people felt that way. And some of that pivot is understandable. It seems that young adults, they might be tending towards the socialist viewpoint for reasons of security. You know, that might make sense. The job market has evolved quickly. We'll all likely work a bunch of different jobs in a variety of different sectors over our working lifetimes. And that might be anxiety inducing. Our parents, their parents, our grandparents, you know, they didn't have that same experience, but just because that reaction might be understandable, it doesn't mean that we think gravitating away from capitalism is best.
Okay, so I think we should define our terms then, Matt, while we're starting out here. We should maybe say what capitalism is. And what modern capitalism was essentially founded by Scottish economist Adam Smith. He wrote the book The Wealth of Nations, which most of us learned about as we were studying history in school. Mm-hmm. And the literal definition of capitalism is, and I quote, an economic system in which private individuals or businesses own capital goods. It's the production of goods and services based on supply and demand in the general market. But there's also the reality that even before the terms free market and capitalism came into our vernacular, before we knew what capitalism was, that free trade has been this basic human instinct, right? Even before physical currencies were created, before we could trade things back and forth with metal coins or, you know, paper currency.
And seashells and rice.
Exactly, like what we learned about when we talked with Jacob Goldstein.
That's right.
People were trading agricultural goods back and forth, like grain or cattle. And when it comes down to it, capitalism is kind of more like the lack of a system than a complex structured one. And so really it functions around individual needs and then the subsequent ingenuity that comes along attempting to meet those needs.
That's right. And you know, when you say ingenuity, basically what you're talking about here is competition. And we feel that that is core to the capitalist system. Because here's the thing, like, we're not saying that, like, we're not anarchists, right? We believe that there is a certain amount of law. Like, the rule of law needs to exist in order for there to be healthy competition.
Yeah, that actually helps foster a robust capitalist system.
Yeah, exactly. Because if you don't have any laws, then competition just leads to death as people are literally literally clobbering each other for the scarce goods. And so I wanted to quickly provide a foil to capitalism. Let's mention the Scandinavian countries.
Ooh, everybody likes talking about those.
Your motherland. I feel like there's been a lot of discussion in recent years about Sweden, Denmark, about Norway.
That's my favorite of those three.
That's your country. And how these, like, quote-unquote socialist countries are basically like the gold standard. Many have said that the U.S. should actually aim to be more like these countries. And interestingly enough, we don't completely disagree here, and that's because these countries aren't actually all that socialist. Sure, like, they definitely have higher tax rates, they've got a, you know, stronger social safety nets, but when we're talking about economic freedom, most of these countries have ranked higher than the U.S. in recent years. Here's the thing, the governments in these countries, they don't own the means of production, which is what socialism actually is. And so if you're looking for that type of economic system, you're going to have to look back in history to the USSR, or more recently to Venezuela and Cuba. Those aren't countries where most of us want to live. But interestingly enough, these Scandinavian countries, they seem to prioritize free markets better than we do here in the U.S. these days. But that's just an interesting note, because it seems that these Scandinavian countries have prioritized free markets recently better than the U.S. has.
Yeah, I think it's an important part of the conversation, because those countries have admirable qualities, and there is a lot to admire about some of those Scandinavian countries, what they've been able to produce, and the happy people that they've been able to produce overall. And it's interesting to see that actually capitalism has been, you know, a robust part of that.
And that, more so lately over the past couple decades.
Exactly.
For sure.
There have been a lot of, and we can link to an article too from Reason Magazine, where John Stossel details how Sweden in particular has changed over the years to looking more like the United States than the traditional Sweden of the 60s and 70s. And this isn't to say that there's more overall economic freedom in Scandinavian countries than there is in the U.S. There are still lots of government-run services, but they also have the taxes to fund them. And so while the U.S. has a tax-to-GDP ratio of somewhere in the range of 25%, it's closer to 45% over in the Nordic countries. So more of your paycheck, a good bit more of your paycheck, is going to fund those social services. And that's not to say that those countries are worse off. It's okay to have different countries doing different things. We think it provides a nice balance to the world. You know, folks who, you know, want to take it easier can move to Norway, although I think the immigration policies there are pretty tight. And if you want to, I might be able to get in just because of my ancestry. But
just because of your name.
And if you want to duke it out, then, you know, that's what the U.S. does really well. And companies like Apple, Google, Ford, Pfizer and Delta, they have all flourished under the capitalist system.
These are all U.S. companies that haven't only just made our lives better, but, like, I mean, they literally have made the entire world better.
Exactly. Yeah, when you look at some of these companies, many of them make more money overall outside of the United States than they make inside of the U.S. these days. And, you know, Matt, you and I were obviously not all-knowing beings, but I'm guessing that these companies might not even exist if it weren't for the capitalistic framework that exists in the U.S. that led them to flourishing. We probably wouldn't have Netflix or eBay either.
Yeah, these are companies, again, like, can you think of one company from, like, a Scandinavian or Nordic country? Like, you probably can't.
I'm thinking, like, Nestle in Switzerland. They're
maybe. Like, I don't even know, though. Yeah. Like, it sounds kind of like an American company. Like, like Nordic Track, that doesn't count either. But it is interesting to see the privatization that has happened over time in some of these countries.
Spotify, I believe. Are they a British company? Or are they? Maybe they might even be a Swedish company, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, again, why are we talking about this? Because we normally stick to personal finance, and now we're going to be getting more into the broader field of economics with this discussion. But because we live in a free market economy, we feel that it's important to know how it functions so that we can thrive inside of it. And maybe this episode will help you to understand just the societal waters that we are all swimming in. And another reason we feel compelled to talk about capitalism today is because of just the changing perceptions by many that free markets aren't actually good. We think that they are. And so we're going to discuss that and more right after this break.
All right, we're back. Matt, let's keep annoying our listeners talking about capitalism here for a second, and kind of,
it's not annoying. This is an important conversation.
Yes, I agree. I think it is. And you know, you and I, again, this is not necessarily the normal route we take, but we feel compelled to discuss this, because when knowing the water that you're swimming in and knowing kind of how a capitalist system operates and what's good and what's bad about it, we're going to cover both of sides of the coin here on today's episode.
And to think about it and talk about it in a way that's just fair and well-rounded.
Yeah.
That's what we're trying to do here.
Because, like you mentioned before the break, like, perceptions have changed. changed around capitalism. Yes. And quickly, really, in even just the last 10 to 15 years. And perception tends to define our reality, like how we view things influences the way that we interact with the world around us. And it seems that we as a society have developed like what I would define as a bipolar approach towards capitalism and then generally and then towards big businesses specifically, because when Americans are surveyed, the stats show that we don't trust businesses very much. At least that's how we respond to folks that do the polling. Mm-hmm. Roughly 18% of folks who were asked whether they trust big businesses said yes. So that's a paltry sum of people. Most of them are like,
it's a pretty low approval rating.
Yeah, no, I don't trust business at all. But at the same time, some of the biggest businesses out there are actively adored. Like folks love their iPhone and they use Google products or search mm-hmm. on a daily, if not an hourly basis. We're fascinated by Tesla cars. We're amazed at the fact that Costco can sell a fully cooked rotisserie chicken for $4.99. There's this disconnect between the way we think about big businesses broadly and then the way we interact with them in our daily lives.
Totally, man. And unfortunately, I feel like it. Like what's at the core, like what's at the root of this is selfishness, right? Because we think, oh, well, I want to enjoy the things that I want to, that I like to purchase or the services that I like to participate in. But generally speaking, when it comes to these large businesses, I don't trust them.
Yeah.
Like it makes me think of, like if you've identified that housing affordability is a problem, basically, like what it comes down to is that there is not enough housing here in the United States, especially as there are more and more folks who are looking to buy homes. And so one of the most obvious solutions is housing density, right? We're talking about condos, we're talking about apartments, but that same person who might be like, oh yeah, that's what we need, they might be the same person that goes to a community meeting where they're proposing some apartments on the corner
and they're like,
in their
NIMBY.
Neighborhood.
No.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And so there's this cognitive dissonance here, and that is the biggest thing that we're trying to address head on here during this episode.
Exactly. I think it's a good way to put it, because I think there's like one thing that we do with our wallets, with our habits, with our actions, and there's another thing that we're saying with our mouths or thinking with our brains.
Yeah, and we would argue that what we're doing with our wallets really reveals where our heart is when it comes to these matters. And another sort of, I guess, argument here for capitalism is that, like, contrary to popular opinion, the purpose of a business is not necessarily to make money.
Oh, that might be mind-blowing to some people. They're like, well, what are you talking about? Of course, that's the reason businesses exist.
Like money, profits are necessary, of course, in order to run a business. But the primary reason businesses exist is basically to provide value, right? And so, for instance, if this podcast doesn't provide enough value for you, like you're going to find another money podcast to listen to. Maybe you'll listen to like True Crime.
Like, I hate Matt and Joel so much, I'm done with money podcasts altogether.
Like the same is true with like a grocery store right around the corner. You know, I love Aldi. Is Aldi taking advantage of their customers, or are they providing a valuable service? Because I might not personally shop at Fresh Market myself as an individual, but they certainly aren't taking advantage of anyone as long as folks have the option.
That's right. And there are lots of options because of the competition you talked about earlier, Matt. And there are just so many examples we could come up with here, like as to companies that are providing value that are changing things in a way that are making things better for us as individuals. Like, why have so many How to Money listeners switched to Mint Mobile? Well, probably because
they're good competition.
About it a lot. but it's this fairly new company really on the scene that's offering better service and lower prices than the old school cell phone companies. People are starting to realize that.
Specifically lower prices.
Yeah. It's like
like the same service for the best price.
Exactly. So instead of paying $50 a month, I'm paying $15 and I'm getting really the same exact product.
Yep.
And so, yeah, that is capitalism at work. Or why are folks leaving big banks for online banks with better features? Also, capitalism and competition.
You're hitting all the things that we love to talk about that we're trying to convince people to switch over to.
Exactly. And this is just all voluntary, really. Like, nobody's forcing you to do this. Nobody's holding a gun to your head saying, like, you must switch to Mint Mobile. We're suggesting it, and you know, many of you have taken advantage, but you don't have to if you're like, listen, I love paying $112 a month to Verizon. More power to you. Keep doing it. Like, you don't have to make the switch. And you don't have to buy stuff on Amazon if you don't want to either. You do it, or lots of people do it, because that business has created an immense amount of value. And I think that value was made even more apparent during the pandemic, during the last 2 years. You can find almost anything you want. It's priced reasonably, and then it's shipped to your home in this ridiculously short period of time. I mean, I think that's a big part of it, is that capitalism is not coercive, and really it's up to us to decide how we want to interact with these companies that are vying for our dollars.
That's right. At the same time, though, let's make sure that we are approaching capitalism from with a balanced perspective, because it's important to realize that free markets, they can't fix everything.
That's true.
Capitalism has broken a lot of things on the road to progress, and this is specifically is a force known as creative destruction. So for example, as PCs, as computers were invented and then adopted by the masses, typewriters, they went away almost overnight. Smith Corona is an old typewriter company, and they began to lose millions of dollars a year, completely upending a legitimate business that employed a lot of people. But that destruction, it unleashed just a torrent of creativity, which gave rise ultimately to tens of millions of new jobs. The same thing is true with Kodak and the advent of digital cameras. They even invented, I think, one of the first digital cameras ever.
I think the first digital camera. Kodak created it.
But they assumed that it was going to cannibalize their film business, which is what Kodak was. I mean, it was obviously the bulk of their profits. And so what they do? They didn't release it. They stuck it on the shelf. And of course, we all know how that worked out for Kodak specifically. And so creative destruction, it causes targeted harm in the short term, but it also creates way more opportunity for everyone in the long run.
That's right. Yeah, we're all happy that we have digital cameras now, even though at the time Kodak was like, this is like the worst thing that's ever happened to us.
At the time, it's a threat, yeah. But over the long haul, it's something that they could have gotten behind,
yeah.
And you know, they could have been the leader in digital cameras.
And some businesses do die in this process of bringing better ideas and better services and goods to the world, right? And let's talk about, too, Matt, just the creative destruction thing is important to mention. It's important to say that there are certain specific pockets, certain industries, and certain locations that are negatively impacted as creative destruction takes place. I mean, you can look at Detroit as a prime example. But here's the thing. You can find things wrong with any system. You know, has capitalism exploited different groups of people over the years? The answer to that question is yes. And is there such a thing as crony capitalism? Yes, that exists too. Some businesses have benefited from the political relationships that they formed, meaning they get preferential treatment thanks to cozy relationships with elected officials. And we would say that is a form of capitalism that is not pure and not good.
Yeah.
And it negatively affects other companies. Like some companies are trying to protect themselves, protect their company through political means. And you can also, at the same time, you could point to a bunch of different businesses that aren't great representations of the free market, or even businesses that have actively caused harm to lots of people. I'm thinking of Enron or Theranos. Like, those are companies that you don't want to mimic. You don't want to go by their playbook because they lied, cheated, they were deceptive. And you know, but you can also at the same time easily point to other economic models. And I would say flaws that exist in those are even more severe than the ones that exist in the capitalist framework. And so those examples, they don't negate, we would say, the overwhelming human progress that's been achieved thanks to free markets. And I think we could at this point share some stats, Matt, even about just how far we've come in the last 250 years, largely thanks to the free market system flourishing across the world, just longer lifespans, greater wealth achieved, and really like people just having more choice in their lives.
Totally. And what we're getting at here is the fact that, I mean, oftentimes when there are bad players in a system like capitalism, it's not because necessarily of the system. It's because of individuals. And what we're arguing here is that with any system, there are going to be folks who screw things up for everybody else.
Yeah.
The benefit, though, you know, and we're going to get to this, I think, maybe here in a little bit, we'll talk a little bit more about just the self-cleansing aspects that capitalism provides. The companies that you mentioned, Enron, Theranos, those are both companies that don't exist anymore.
That's right.
Because of the way the market works. In that way, it self-corrects. But like you said, there are certain sectors where the free market can run amok, where it can cause a lot of damage. I'm specifically thinking about the Volkswagen emissions scandal. I think that was a few years ago.
Yeah.
But you know, public companies, they sometimes lie or they cover up their misdeeds in the pursuit of profits. That's not okay. And those examples give capitalism a bad reputation. And of course, we do need public goods and services. Like Amazon, as a private company, they can't fix the nation's infrastructure problems,
right?
They need public roads and bridges to even have a business. And so we believe that a certain amount of government services and regulations, public utilities, these things are all definitely necessary to prevent abuses of capitalism. But that being said, these laws, these regulations, they should not keep us from prioritizing free markets in most of the areas in our lives.
Yeah, Matt, I think another argument maybe is that there's less individual security in a society that's more steeped in capitalism like we are here in the United States. There's some truth to that argument. But I think it's important for us to mention what happens if the government doesn't step in some of these occasions. Well, it turns out that we have an incredible array of nonprofits in this country too. And Americans, are very, very generous people. In fact, when you look at the rankings, we've ranked number one in worldwide generosity over the past decade. So yeah, when Americans prosper under the capitalist system, they tend to share the wealth that they accrue with others in need. And you know, while the U.S. doesn't necessarily have as strong of a safety net as some other developed nations, there's still a lot of government aid for folks who are in real need. And so, yeah, I guess the question could be asked, do we need more of that? Do we need more government programs? And do we need more money going into the hands of the most needy in our society? That is a worthwhile debate.
Sure.
That's something that I think we would probably admit. In some instances, there is more money needed flowing into the hands of individuals who need help in our country. But I think we can have that debate while still appreciating the free market system that we've got and how much it has done for really all of us. It's that rising tide that's lifted all the boats.
Totally. Yeah. And actually, you know, while we're talking about the social safety net, job security, like that's something else that comes to mind because, we were just talking about creative destruction, how job security, how it's not guaranteed in a capitalist economy. That might definitely be seen as a major downside to capitalism. But do we really want a government to prop up companies, let alone, you know, entire industries that aren't succeeding? I'm sure a lot of folks would say no, like that's not what we need. And unfortunately, that means individuals are going to lose jobs in the moment. But I think that the responsibility lies with us as individuals. Plus our generation, you know, like we've also learned that the best way to actually earn more is by switching companies, getting a new job. And so do you really want the, you know, like the soul crushing monotony of working for the same company, doing the same thing for 30 years in an industry that's, you know, kind of fading away?
Yeah, it'd be like us continuing to podcast when nobody listens to podcasts anymore 25 years from now.
Like what's the point?
Right.
And like some folks might want to, some folks might like that consistency and that's totally fine. Folks might not want to change, but there's also room for more individual advancement because of capitalism and the options that people actually have.
Yeah, man, I feel like that's really true. And I feel like, yeah, we tried to give some cons and talk about the downsides of capitalism, but
destruction that capitalism is causing.
It's actually good in the long run. So
it's almost like I picture a bush or a tree getting pruned. It's like, yeah, it hurts in the moment. Like it's not a good thing. It's not something that the tree likes or the plant enjoys. But in the end, if that means this tree is going to be healthier, if it means that this vegetable plant is going to bear more fruit,
that's right,
because of, you know, in a way we can kind of call it discipline that's being, you know, provided to this organism, that's how we see creative destruction.
Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, in our attempts to denigrate capitalism, I think we still can say good things about it. But we have some more reasons that we actually think capitalism is a great thing. And we will unapologetically tell you what those reasons are, and we'll get to them right after this break.
Dude, so it totally feels like we're just making out with capitalism. Like Matt and Joel, they just love capitalism. And again, we want to reinforce that we don't think it's perfect. There are some shortcomings that it has.
I can see us releasing some shirts that are like, I love capitalism or something like that. I don't know if we'll go that far.
I don't know if I would even wear that. Like, I don't know. Like, there's a difference between embracing something and saying that this is the best thing ever, as opposed to giving it like the tip of the cap. Like, it's something that we are grateful for, and it's something that most everybody listening to this has benefited and is currently partaking in the capitalist system. But obviously, there are some unintended consequences. Because of that, I think we try to avoid talking about capitalism in our, you know, within our culture. But that being said, let's go ahead and dig into it. Maybe a few more reasons that we feel that capitalism has been so successful. And I wanted to mention how The Economist, Tyler Cowen, he calls the U.S. a nation of weirdos. And I mentioned that because, like many other countries, have more of a reticence towards innovation specifically. Why that is, that's tough to answer. But the way in which our country was founded alongside, you know, the melting pot of talented humans, it's just created such a diversity of thought and talent. And that has all led to extraordinary innovation here in the U.S. We prize this unique individuality, and it's, you know, it's great for the most part, but, you know, that sometimes gets out of hand. I'm thinking about how oftentimes celebrities, they get idolized, and the wealthy, they get way more attention than they probably should be getting.
True.
But one of the consequences, you know, is that this lionization also leads to more risk-taking, which ultimately does benefit us all. But bottom line, the U.S., it's always been known as the land of opportunity, and it's no wonder that nearly 50 million immigrants actually live here.
Yes, I agree. So it's crazy. I think that how welcoming we are to immigrants and how they have, people from all over the world have been able to prosper because just under the system is something worth holding up as like one of the reasons that capitalism is so great. Another reason, Matt, you mentioned this earlier, you hinted at this, the self-cleansing nature of capitalism.
I think it's like the best part of capitalism.
Yeah, it's great. It really is. And it's one of those things that in the moment, like you said, can be painful for certain companies or for certain people who work in a specific sector. But yeah, did you know at one point that MySpace was considered a monopoly? I think that tells you all you need to know about like how capitalism works because I bet a lot of our listeners are like, huh, what's MySpace?
Yeah.
If you don't remember Tom from MySpace, like you're not doing it right, okay? Like Matt and I, we had—
Or you're younger than us because we're geriatric millennials.
We journaled on Zanga.com back in the day. I bet most of our listeners don't remember that site either.
Spell it with an X.
And so, yeah, these are companies that for a while they had their moment in the sun and today they either don't exist or nobody knows that they exist. Apple was the 56th largest company in 2010. Today, they're number one. And so, yeah, are they going to be there for forever? I wouldn't bet on it. Like, just like I wouldn't have bet on MySpace being number one for forever at the time. Amazon was the 100th largest business in 2010. Today, they're number four. And yeah, I wouldn't bet on them being the top dog for decades to come either. Although right now, in the current moment, it feels like they will be. But yeah, a free market where we as consumers have the option to vote with our time and our money, it dictates the businesses that make the cut. And those businesses that make the cut, it's this ever-evolving and changing list. It's not always the same companies that continue to thrive year after year.
That's right. Yeah. Capitalism, it's that refiner's fire, man. And so on the other side of the coin, Toys R Us, they spent 24 years on the Fortune 500 list, and then they filed for bankruptcy a few years ago. Why? Well, largely because of Amazon and the changing landscape for buying toys. The most powerful companies are not guaranteed their place on top, and they rarely stay there for that long. They must continue to innovate. Otherwise, they die. And that makes room for just these smaller, more nimble companies with better ideas who can implement those ideas in ways that we feel are going to make the market even better. Economist Thomas Sowell said that capitalism, actually, it might be more accurately be described as consumerism and not consumerism in the way that we traditionally talk about it here on the show. And that's because it's consumers who call the tune and capitalists are the ones who have to learn to dance to it. When you think about it that way, I feel like that we've got way more power within the system than we normally assume that we do.
That's a good point. I think sometimes we feel like it's our capitalist overlords who determine everything that's going to happen in this society when really it's up to us as individuals to we determine whether those businesses yep. fail or succeed.
We have way more free will and options than we realize.
Yeah, and that brings us to another great aspect of capitalism is that it decentralizes power. So when we view it through the lens that you were just talking about, Matt, it really does appear that capitalism is truly the most democratic economic system that exists. It's not one dictator or government officials, a small group of elites in Washington, D.C. calling the shots. And it's not even the companies who are deciding what's best for us, and we just have to take it. It's us as individuals who are making the decisions for what is best for us, for our families. The market really knows better than the smartest folks out there, even a conglomeration of those folks. And yeah, when I think of products or institutions that I'm the most frustrated with, oftentimes it can be when the government is involved.
Yeah, that's so true.
DMV, getting a building permit. It took me 3 months to get permits for my, and I had to go through an almost 6 month long process just to get plans approved. Mm. And I'm not saying that those aspects of government aren't needed at all, although I will say, it was over the top. And there was no need for the extended time frame that it took me to have a really small change to my home approved, especially when I was following the existing line of the house, the way it was built and constructed. Mm-hmm. But it is interesting how we are often served better by the companies we choose to do business with rather than the government who we are sometimes forced to do business with by no choice of our own.
Yeah, you're not thinking about the great customer experience that you had with the IRS when it comes to tax season.
That's right. I mean, how many millions and millions of tax returns
the
have
backlog.
They still yes have yeah. they still yet to you know they're still refunds due to millions of people that that have not received them. And, you know, obviously pandemic, we're going to give them a little bit of grace and short staffed. But at the same time, like, it's just it's worth pointing out those inconsistencies.
Absolutely. It seems that these are all areas where some privatization could definitely help. In the end, we feel that markets are the best system for defining value. You can't make a profit. You can't increase your profits without adding to the value that you're injecting out into the world. And another thing too, capitalism, it's not the zero-sum game. The more people who find purpose in creating value, the more that we are all going to benefit. There are entire industries that are going to exist in 10 years that we're not even aware of now. And those will all be industries and areas and companies who we are giving our money to.
Or think about the guy
that we want to give our money to.
Right. You know? And think about the guy who created Wordle on a whim. And he sold it to the New York Times for more than $1 million.
Yeah, that's all. Well, yeah, that's what we know.
That's all we know.
Seven figures.
But just to think that, like, he created something in his spare time and somehow it's worth that much money. And that was something that the New York Times didn't know that they needed to add to their arsenal of word games. And that was something that the world didn't know that they wanted. But that's the beauty of kind of ingenuity and capitalism, how that can be brought to the masses through just the general act of creating something and trying to add value to the world. And I think really you just kind of can't argue with the results that capitalism has created. Like, it's raised the standard of living for hundreds of millions of people, for billions of people around the world. And countries that are more recent converts, let's say, we've seen substantial changes in very little time to the standard of living of everyday folks. It makes me think of, like, Matt, when I went to Thailand like 5 or 6 years ago, it was astounding to see, like, how well their economy was doing, how well ordinary individuals were thriving inside of that economy as they're, like, kind of really beginning a ramp up into a more free market economy. And what I'd heard before I went there from people that had gone decades before was that there was so much poverty. And it's not that there wasn't any, but I saw not nearly as much as I expected. And I feel like so much of the progress has to be attributed to what's happened with just their economic system and being more open to capitalism in general.
That's right, dude. You know, I kind of mentioned this earlier because this episode, it doesn't have a clear takeaway. You know, this isn't 7 ways to save money this week. It's not that kind of episode. But even still, we hope that we've been able to just put capitalism in a different light. You know, we think it's important to consider all the different angles to this economic system that we're a part of. We hope that it doesn't feel like we've just been kind of hitting you over the head with with the textbook of capitalism. But we do, we did want to talk about the benefits that we have all received from capitalism. But ultimately, sort of like when we're talking about how there's always like those, there's always going to be some bad apples in the basket, right? There are always going to be individuals who make it seem like the system that we are currently in isn't working out. But ultimately, we feel that it does come down to the individual and the choices that you make and the things that you pursue and how it is that you spend your time, your money. And so while, you know, this is one of these episodes where we're zooming out, we're looking at sort of this larger pool of water that we're all swimming in. Or really, it's not even a pool. I mean, it's like an ocean. We're talking about our country's economy. Even still, we feel that so much of our own individual outcomes come down to what we do as individuals.
Yeah, man, I think we can rail against the system, we can rage against the machine, or we can kind of say, all right, this is the reality. We live in this free market society. How do I, as someone who has these gifts, participate in this market economy in a way that provides value? And I think when you think about it like that, it might actually completely change the way you view your job or your desire to start your own business, because you're like, you know what? If I can provide value in this way, I can serve a lot of people and at the same time make a living for my family. That is the beauty of this system, is that there is boundless opportunity. You can create the opportunity, and there's a lot of room to run in the capitalist system for anybody who wants to serve their fellow human. And the great thing is it can make you a living as well. So that's kind of how we view capitalism. And we hope you stuck around to the end and learned a lot during this episode, because we're just kind of nerdy dudes too. And we like thinking about this stuff. So,
and that being said, if you completely disagree with us, we would love to hear from you. And maybe, you know, on the subsequent Friday Flight episode here in a couple of days, maybe we'll talk a little bit more about it. If you have a different opinion, if that's you, definitely reach out to us. Shoot us an email at howtomoneypod@gmail.com.
That's right. We always love hearing from our listeners. All right, Matt, let's get back
fellow nerds who might happen to have a different perspective.
That's right. So we're going to get back to the craft beer that we had on this episode. But you and I talked before this we started recording this episode, and we said, man, isn't it crazy that the United States has, it's not that there aren't great beers in other parts of the world. There certainly are. But we have per capita, like more great beer
easily
than any other nation in the world. And
if the United States was a communist country, what kind of beer would we have?
We definitely would not be drinking this beautiful barrel-aged barley wine.
Oh my gosh, we definitely wouldn't have the variety that we have here, and we're certainly lucky to have this beer. Again, this is a Bourbon Barrel Brick Kiln by Jackie O's. What were your thoughts on this one?
Okay, so this, again, one of my favorite breweries. And this is a top-notch beer. And it might be, I would say, I would venture to say it's maybe the best barley wine I've ever had.
Dang.
It's at least top three.
Okay.
This is a really, really good beer. And barley wines are...
See, the problem with me is that I don't drink barley wines enough to like even really remember like what the top barley wines I've had are.
I remember one of the Goose Island annual releases they legit. That was probably
not the year that they screwed them up.
2014 or something like that. Yeah. That was a long time ago. But this one was a little sweet. It was slightly boozy. It had some oak, some vanilla, and some raisin notes going on.
Dude, raisin all the way.
Yes.
Like dried, just dried fruit like that with some nice creamy notes.
All those notes hitting your tongue at the same time, and it was delicious.
You know, actually, one of our favorite local breweries, Monday Night, they back in the day, they had this beer that was called, speaking of the economy and whatnot, that was called Laissez-Faire. And if they still had that beer, maybe instead of A Force for Good, which we had recently, maybe we should have had Laissez-Faire on, but I think that's the beer that they retired. I think it was, if I remember correctly, I think it was a barley wine that they aged in red wine barrels, but anyway.
That sounds tasty.
I mean, I don't know why I'm talking about it, because you can't buy it anymore. It's not a beer that they make, but I completely agree. As I thought about how to describe this beer, obviously all the notes that you mentioned, but fatty stood out to me as well.
Okay,
it felt like it was just like this decadent. It was like, I don't know, like if you give a nice piece of toast and maybe just like a touch, like you're just putting the butter on thick, you know, and you're eating it and you're just like, this is like luxurious. That's what I was thinking as I was drinking this. It just had like this depth. It had this umami.
Like a velvety sort of.
Oh my gosh.
Totally.
Yeah. And not just completely in the texture, but just in the flavors and how it all came together. It actually kind of reminded me of a Belgian quad as well, because of like the, you know, like the raisin kind of fig flavors going on, but it didn't have that Belgian funky yeast flavors going on. It's almost like an American quad, if that exists. I don't think it does, but I'm certainly glad that you and I got to enjoy this beer. Again, this is by Jackie O's, and if you ever come across their beers, I don't think you'll be disappointed. Pick one up.
Yes, pick one up, or three, or five. Like they make really good beers.
Yep.
So, all right, Matt, that's going to do it for this episode. For listeners who want show notes for this episode, go to our website at howtomoney.com. And again, please do send us an email. If you have a counterpoint, we'd love to hear it from you.
Seriously.
howtomoneypod@gmail.com.
All right, man. So that is going to be it for this episode. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.